Ish decided to seek advice from the wisest guy I'd ever known.
I want to speak to Millie from the pop dance group Millie und Vanilli.
That's Sacha Baron Cohen from the movie Bruno and his take on psychics and mediums. And even though it's wickedly funny.
Is he in heaven? And if so, is he in the VIP section there?
I don't think it's very accurate.
He says he's in a place with green trees and flowers.
In fact, on this episode, you're going to hear from a medium who's really, really good. And I say that because she's been tested by somebody I really rely on in terms of after-death communication research, and that's Dr. Julie Beischel. So she's been tested and certified at the highest level, and that's really cool because it means you can ask her anything and she has all the answers, right? Well, not exactly, but you can still ask her anything. You can ask her all these deep, big-picture questions, and here's some of the stuff I asked her. You know, the other thing, like you said, you ask me anything, and it's like, I was preparing for this interview, and I'm like, this is kind of insane in a way. I'm asking the biggest questions, and I'm just turning them over to Marissa because she can talk to spirit. For example, these people in these laboratory settings are able to, you know, have precognitive experiences. Well, what the hell does that mean? What does that mean about our relationship to time? But then I've had other guests on the show that have said, you know, our understanding of reincarnation is, again, mistaken because of our misunderstanding about time and that we're really living multiple lives simultaneously. Switch over to another topic and talk about near-death experiences. A lot of my questions here are around this topic of mapping out these extended consciousness realms. I mean, what is the near-death experience from a spirit standpoint? What is spirit telling us? Why do people have those? How are they different from OBE, astral travel, lucid dreaming, this extended realm? How does it map out with regard to those different ways of being? So it's really cool to talk to Marissa. So cool, in fact, that when we were done, I couldn't resist asking her to do a reading for me. And I paid for it and all that. There wasn't any kind of quid pro quo, but I wanted to see if she could do it for me. And since one of the big things going on in my life as the father of four teenagers, as long as you stretch that age limit a little bit, so I asked her questions about parenting and parenting help and advice, basically. So I don't want to play that whole reading because it's kind of personal, but I can tell you a little anecdote that I think is significant to me. And that's that we're doing this reading and she connects with my father on the other side, spirit form, if you believe all this stuff, which if you're listening to this, I guess you probably do, or at least open to it. So I'm like, Dad, come on, man, help me out here. What are you doing? I'm kind of praying to you to help me. And here's the point. What would you expect? Put yourself in that scenario. What would you expect this medium who is a woman, who is a mother of her own, who is comforting? What would you expect her to say at that point if you were skeptical? If you said, okay, she's just going to say some standard stuff, what would you expect her to say? How about this?
Like, I hear him saying, what do you mean? I'm supposed to jump in and help. He's like, you're on your own.
Well, I got to tell you, when she said that, I nearly fell off my chair because that's my dad. That's my dad. I can't tell you how many times he said that exact phrase. So this is the part of medium readings that is hard to convey to people who are not convinced, who are super skeptical, who don't want to try or be open to something more. It's not about the data. The data is great. The research of Dr. Julie Beischel confirming statistically, scientifically, that this stuff happens after death communication is statistically significant. That's great. But what really happens that really changes people is they have this kind of connection. But that's not the approach I took in the interview. Of course, what I asked in the interview was just all the big picture kind of skeptico stuff, and it was really, really interesting. Doesn't mean she's right about everything, but it's really interesting given that she can bring forth this other kind of stuff and have it be so meaningful. It does make me wonder about the other stuff she has to say. So all that's coming up. I think you'll really enjoy this interview. But before we get to it, I want to ask for your help. Now, you know, Skeptico is free. There's no paywall. There's no ads. There's no anything. I do it because it doesn't cost a lot of money to do it, and I love to do it. And the reason I love to do it is because I grow so much by doing it, and I grow so much by connecting with you. You, the listeners of Skeptico, and so many of you have become friends, real friends, and in a much deeper way than many of the people I know in my life. But that connection, that community, is what it's all about to me. And I haven't always found the best way to create that community or promote that community, but it's a new year, it's a new beginning, and I want to try again to do that. So what I'd ask you to do is just simply to connect. And I'm going to have a big, easy way to do that if you visit the Skeptico website at Skeptiko, and you can join the newsletter. And it isn't really a newsletter. It'll just be a way of us talking. I'm not selling anything. I don't have any interest in giving the list away or anything like that. But it's just a way to connect. And if you don't want to do that, then please join the Skeptico Forum. I want to be really active over there, and I think I have been pretty active. But if you join the Skeptico Forum, it's just kind of a way for us to dive deeper. And I know we can do that on a bunch of other social media platforms, but I just don't always wind up getting over there to those. But I will if that's where you want me to go. And along those same lines, you know, when you do connect with me, I hope we can also have a dialogue about where you'd like to see the show go. And I say that with the caveat that that doesn't mean necessarily that's where I'm going to take the show, but I at least want to know where you're coming from, what you like, what you don't like, what guests you'd like to see, if you'd like to help me bring some of those guests forward, which is something I always ask people to do because I like to get people involved in the show on that level rather than kind of take this passive, like, okay, dish up the next show because you owe me because I subscribe to your podcast kind of thing. I mean, that's not where I'm coming from. Where I'm coming from is, look, we're trying to figure this stuff out together, so I'll do my part, you do your part. So, you know, that's, I guess, the first part of this connection thing. So I'm asking you, I'm reaching out to you, come on, reach back and tell me that you're out there. And then let's figure out where we're going to go with this really cool Skeptico thing we've created. Okay, so enough of that. Let's get on to my interview with Marissa Ryan. Today we welcome Marissa Ryan to Skeptico. Marissa is a talented psychic and medium whose abilities have been verified by our friend Dr. Julie Beischel at the Winbridge Institute and by the person who most recently recommended her to me, a Skeptico listener, Johnny, who's helped me book some shows previously. Marissa, it's great to have you here. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you so much.
As I just mentioned to you, having listened to some of your YouTube presentations and some of your interviews, as well as some of the shows that you do, I know you're pretty much comfortable with the rapid fire questioning thing. So I thought we might just jump right into this and see where it goes.
Oh, absolutely. Go for it. Rapid fire away.
Well, I have to start by saying you're about the only person I've ever heard of who started their psychic / medium career as a psychic detective. The first case they ever did, the first experience they ever did. Do you want to tell folks a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, I mean, really how I started was I've never talked to spirits. I didn't think I was psychic my entire life growing up. And then I had a tragic loss of my mother and niece, both died 2 days apart. And that kind of made me starting to wonder, like, well, okay, where did they go? What happens when they die? You know, and I started doing some research. But, you know, a year went by and life got in the way and I had a baby that was a surprise and all these things happened. And then really started looking into my niece's death because I didn't understand why she would have died being in perfect health. And what happened was a friend of mine had emailed me about, it's this really crazy story. Her cats went missing and she emailed me that she had gone to some pet medium and a pet psychic or something like that to find out why her cats were missing. And this murder victim came in that happened to have lived in the neighborhood that we had lived in, that I had lived in prior. And so long story short, she sends me this email, the article of this girl saying, hey, do you remember her? You know, she used to ride her bike in our neighborhood. And I went to talk about my cats. And all of a sudden this murder girl came in and she had brought my name up, you know, Marissa. And she's like, I don't understand what's going on. And I, of course, me, I'm thinking my friend's a little kooky and I'm thinking, I don't know what you think I'm going to do about it. Anyways, I looked at the article and I went, wow, what a sad story. And I closed my computer. And when I did that, all of a sudden I heard my name being called and I turned around and I saw the spirit of the girl that was in the article standing in front of me. And as she was moving back and forth and around, I could see cuts where her head, arms, and legs were. And so I at first thought I was just seeing things and losing my mind as normal. I'm pretty much a skeptic myself. So she started talking to me and I was like, okay, if I'm making this up, let's go for it. We'll just go along with it. And she started showing me her murder. And it was like a video playing and I could see in my mind, this whole murder, like I was floating above watching the whole thing. And she's like narrating it as she's showing it to me. And then I was kind of like, okay, I don't know what to do with this. Thank you. And then I just was like, I'm going to bed because this is just so weird. And she wouldn't leave my bed. She wouldn't leave my bedroom. And she kept saying, you have to call the police. So the next day, very reluctantly, I went back to that article and found out what police department it was and called them up and said, hey, you're going to think I'm nuts. But, and I left this on a voicemail message because they did not answer the detectives didn't answer the phone. But I said, I think I just spoke to this spirit of this murdered girl. And I had a phone call back in 5 minutes.
Come on in. We're going to put the handcuffs on you, which is typical, right?
Well, I mean, the first thing I told him, I said, you know, I'm a mom, you know, I have a job. I'm a mom. I go, I don't even know what I'm doing. I go, but this girl showed up and I go, yeah, I know you're going to think I'm crazy. And of course, the first thing they said was, you know, well, what did she say? And I said, well, she told me you haven't found her head yet. And the minute I said that, because nothing was in the article about how she was killed, then they said, we want to meet with you. And so that afternoon, I met with them in the parking lot of a Target, a local Target. And they had a whole file on me with my picture and they wanted to know all this information about me. And because they thought I knew things, I guess, that no one else knew. And so, of course, they thought I was either a part of the murder or I knew who the murderers were. And so, basically, I drove them about 15 miles around this lake and pointed out areas that she claimed information. And she was in the car showing me where to drive. And they ended up finding her body parts in one of the locations. And so then they really thought something, but they had no proof that I was involved. And from that moment on, she told everybody on the other side I could hear her and see her. And then they all started showing up. And then it was like, okay, what's going on? And I was at my job and I would start seeing spirits of people standing behind, you know, the store owners and, people following people. And I could tell the difference between spirit and a real person. And, it just kind of went crazy from there. It became my life. I mean, I loved my career. I really didn't want to leave my career, but after 3 years of doing both, I actually ended up leaving my career because I was kind of going insane trying to do both. But yeah, and it's basically been my career ever since. I mean, that was 16 years ago and it's been an amazing ride. And it's, you know, it was very hard at first. It kind of takes over your body and your mind and, you know, spirits are very persistent, but it's very rewarding. I've learned a lot of crazy things, like you can, you know, set hours and have boundaries, and which I didn't know either. I mean, I seek the help of other psychics of, I don't know what I'm doing, and can you help me? And, you know, they were like, nope, this is your thing. You need to do this. But it's just been a crazy, wonderful ride. And, I talk to the dead every single day, for thousands of people. And I'm kind of on a mission right now to teach other people to do what I do and to open up their God-given gifts, because, it's really needed, because it creates a lot of healing. And, but it's been really fun.
The one question, I guess, is an awesome story. I've studied the psychic detective kind of phenomenon on this show, and have actually done some sessions. We did an extensive kind of interview with a skeptic guy who we both investigated this case, and we interviewed the police detectives and the psychic detective. And it was really pretty interesting thing we did years ago. I have to ask, was the case resolved for the police? Were they able to solve the case? Because a lot of people don't realize just because you give them valid information doesn't necessarily mean they can solve the case. In this instance, were they able to?
No, they were not able to solve it. I thought that I was meant to solve it. And later to just realize I really wasn't meant to solve it. The biggest issue is I searched for a year and a half for her head. We never found her head. And I sketched the three men that did it, and they ended up validating about 8 months later that they were the three men that they thought had done it. But one of the men, who's now dead, one of the men was an attorney, and they had alibis, and one of them failed a polygraph. But the problem was, is with no witness, with no weapon, and they were missing some DNA, they could not pin them on this, even though they knew, to a point where one of the detectives literally 2 years ago called me up and said, hey, I'm retired now, but I can't stop working on this case. Like, I have to see closure. Will you help me? One of them died, and I want to see if you can contact him, and he'll give you more information.
Wow.
And, yeah. And I was like, and he still had the case, and we had breakfast, and he showed me the case and everything. Long story short is I could not get the guy to come to me. The spirit would not come to me. He didn't want to tell me anything. And so, no. And so many people criticized and said, oh yeah, she solved the case, or yeah, she thinks she did, or what. No, it didn't get solved. And just because I'm being given information doesn't mean I'm solving. I have solved other missing persons cases that I got closure and we found the bodies, but no, this never was solved.
Well, that's interesting, isn't it? I mean, there's a lot to kind of unpack there in a million different ways, but let me kind of take it in a slightly different direction, because so a lot of people hear that story and they'll have all the reservations that people have about all this stuff. And then it's added, compounded by the fact, like you said, that people get hung up on, well, then why, you know, if she could communicate with you, why didn't she say this and that? And I don't even want to go there necessarily, because those are kind of these level one questions that I've handled over and over and over again over the years. And if people want to, they can go back and listen to all those previous shows and my interviews with Dr. Julie Bischel at the Winbridge Institute and all that stuff. But one question I wanted to ask about Winbridge, I know her testing process is really extensive, and I've heard from other mediums who've gone through it that it's just incredibly rigorous. What was it like for you being quote unquote tested? Is that something you wanted to do? And what was it like going through it?
Yeah, well, you know, I signed myself up for when she was with Dr. Gary Schwartz, and then
way back at the very beginning, huh?
Way back at the very beginning, because this was the thing. I'm a skeptic. And even though I do what I do, it took a lot for me to believe that I was doing what I do. I thought I was making it all up. It took a lot of validation. And I really wanted to go a step further and I get more proof if you can actually get more proof. And so I signed up to do it. And then my father became ill and I had to move him in and take care of him. So I dropped out of the program because I didn't have the time. But then Julie started up Winbridge, and I you know, saw that and I thought, you know, I have time now. So I really wanted to do it. And I emailed her and said, hey, I really want to do this. And I think I was the last medium brought on. And it was extensive. I mean, I didn't find it hard. It could be intimidating. It's complete blind study. So she is incredible at the way she does the process of keeping everything, you know, completely under wraps. We don't know anything. Sometimes we don't even hear a voice. We don't even know a name. We don't know anything. And I've actually flown in to where Winbridge is and done some testing through like blood analysis and things like that as well. And we don't even get results. Those are all confidential. So we don't even get the results. All I know is whatever I did in the process of, you know, what she puts us through, I passed and became one of the research mediums. And it's a fantastic process that she has. And it's really a wonderful institute. And it's for a great cause. And, you know, even to this day, and I've been doing this for 16 years, I still question everything. And I want to say to you, Pete, when you had made the comment that you don't want to go there because people think that spirit is supposed to don't have all the knowledge and why aren't they giving us the information? I kind of like to go there because this is the thing. We as mediums, we don't have all the answers. We don't know why they give us what they do and why they don't give us what they won't. We're just here to receive and we're lucky we get anything. And, you know, spirit, from what my understanding through years and years of doing this now, is they don't have all the answers either. And so, maybe it wasn't solved and maybe it's for a reason. It wasn't supposed to be solved. You know, I had heard that there was possibly family involved and there's reasons. And, that is something to me, Creator only knows the reasons and I may never find out those reasons. So, you know, it's a good question for people to ask, why is spirit not giving me all the details? Believe me, I've had screaming matches, arguments with the spirits themselves of why, and I still don't always get all the answers. And that's I guess called fate. You just have to go with what you get.
Well, that's really interesting too. And I'm glad you brought that up. Where I've tried to go with this thing, and I've been at it for a long way, is try to blend in the best we have of science, and I put science in the air quotes there because so much of the science we have is tied to this very mechanistic, materialistic nonsense that completely isn't looking at this. But then, like we both said, you know, Julie's doing good work because she's handling the natural doubts that curious people have in a way that tries to help them approach this from a reason standpoint. And then at this other hand, you know, we have to jump over to what you're saying, if you really want solid, kind of locked down, reasoned answers to all this, forget it. You're not going to get that at the end. So we're kind of walking in these two worlds. And that's really where I wanted to take you in this interview, because I have a lot of questions. And these are like big, you know, the other thing, like you said, you ask me anything. And it's like, I was preparing for this interview and I'm like, this is kind of insane in a way. I'm asking the biggest questions and I'm just turning them over to Marissa because she can talk to spirit. And therefore I'm going to get like all this big picture answers. Like, well, why should we expect it to be that simple? So of course it isn't, but we shall try. So here, for example, you know, one of the things that I investigated pretty early on is like the work of Dr. Dean Radin, who is this guy who's done this amazing scientific work on precognition or presentiment, feeling the future. And he has these great experiments that show, no question, that these people in these laboratory settings are able to, you know, have precognitive experiences. Well, what the hell does that mean? What does that mean about our relationship to time?
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that we may not ever get an explanation on. Why are we fed bits and pieces? And it's frustrating because people expect spirit to be able to give their address, social security number, blood type. And, you know, I don't know why they don't. That's up to them.
what is Spirit telling you about time and about the future and about precognition and what that might mean in terms of how we experience this kind of time strip that we're in?
Well, what they tell me is the time, there's two different dimensions. There's the other side, which is where the souls live. And then there's the human dimension where we are here three-dimensionally. And this is what they're telling me is that the time is much faster over there. Okay. Much faster. This is a much slower pace here. But that they can come and go. They can come and go through the veil, if you want to call it, back and forth from the dimensions. So that's something that they can do. As far as, is everything pre-written in the future? No, we are given free will. I mean, look at how bad we've screwed up our planet. I mean, we're given free will to do a lot of things. So not everything's pre-written in stone. It's not like we're in the Matrix and we're living out a simulation, you know? That's not what it's about at all.
What does that say, and how does that relate to the question of reincarnation? I've had a great dialogue with Dr. Jim Tucker from the University of Virginia. They've done more research than anyone on this past life phenomenon as it relates to particular cases, you know, and they've done all that. But then I've had other guests on the show that have said, you know, our understanding of reincarnation is, again, mistaken because of our misunderstanding about time, and that we're really living multiple lives simultaneously. And then, again, the work from the University of Virginia says, well, no, people here are now experiencing memories of like a direct past life, like 50 years ago, and here's all the evidence for that. What is Spirit telling you about our relationship to our past lives?
Okay, so Spirit shows me that we have one soul, and that soul can inhabit a body multiple times and multiple lives. And I mean, it could be hundreds. So, and we have soul groups. So imagine you're in a soul group that could be thousands, and the majority of the group is together on the other side in that dimension, getting ready to incarnate into the earth and to come into a new life. That's what we do, is we will reincarnate into a new life. And sometimes it's the same players in the game. You know, our moms could have been our daughter, or our father could have been our husband, or, you know, when we exchange roles, we have different themes that we come here. Why do we come here? Because we can, because we want to learn. They're as fascinated with the human life experience as we're fascinated in life after death. They are just as fascinated. So, or shall I say we, because I'm a soul in a human body. You are a soul in a human body. So, you know, this isn't your first go around. So we're coming back here, and new souls are created all the time. I did a lot of, I did some channeling to get information about, you know, a soul can fragment and create a new soul. So that's how new souls come about. And there are such things as new souls, you know, baby souls, old souls. It just really is about how many times you've been here. I don't believe in parallel lives.
Two questions about that. One, you don't believe in parallel lives. Why? And almost more importantly, what do we do with the contradictions where you're, because I can tell you, and I can't remember off the top of my head, the medium that I talked to, but she's PhD, written this book, and boom, she was like, yeah, it's all about parallel lives, and forget about this idea of sequential lives. So I'm not saying like you're wrong or she's wrong. I'm just saying, why is there that contradiction that and you partially answered that at the beginning, but try and take it again.
I've had clients tell me that they have dreams of them in a parallel life. And the information I get from Spirit when I talk to guides is that, no, that's a past life they're experiencing. I don't believe in parallel lives because we have one soul, and the soul can inhabit a human body at one time. It can't inhabit a human body at multiple bodies at the same time. What would be the purpose of having one soul having parallel lives? That would mean a soul who's having a human life is not whole. They're not a complete soul if they're also experiencing another life. And the thing is, the point is there's no proof there's no proof that that other person you interviewed is correct. And there's no proof that I'm correct.
Right.
There's no proof. And so I can only give the information that I've been taught, that I've learned, or I've experienced. That's why I always tell everybody, you know, you got to listen with your heart and you throw away the rest. I don't see the point. It'd be fascinating to have parallel lives. Yeah, I wouldn't mind having a couple lives going at one time and I can compare, you know, but God, I can barely handle this life. Why would I want to be, why would my soul want to be in another life at the same time? I don't believe it's possible. And I don't believe that you're going to find any ancient cultures that are going to believe that either.
Well, that's interesting because from my experience and research, I would agree with you. That isn't something that's common in all the wisdom traditions. Let me switch over to another topic and talk about near-death experience. It's something, again, we dove into a lot on this show because there's some great science that's emerging out of our medical technology and our ability to resuscitate people. There's more and more people having near-death experiences. They're more able to be verified medically. A lot of my questions here are around this topic of mapping out these extended consciousness realms. I mean, what is the near-death experience from a spirit standpoint? What is spirit telling us? Why do people have those? How are they different from OBE, astral travel, lucid dreaming, this extended realm? How does it map out with regard to those different ways of being?
Actually, to me, in my opinion, it's not that different than having an out-of-body experience or astral traveling. The thing is our soul can leave our body at any time temporarily, at any time. So imagine you're anchored to your soul is anchored to your physical body, and now your physical body has just broken down and it's actually died. Okay. It stopped temporarily functioning. Your soul is like, I'm out of here. Okay. I'm out of here. And it usually, at a time that it's not an actual death, your soul will leave thinking you're going through the exit process of death and your soul is leaving. And all of a sudden you've got people, other souls around you going, you're not done. Where are you going? Get back there. And the body's being revived. And when the body's being revived, it's almost like a jolt of the soul being thrown right back into the body. So they're experiencing the process of death. A near-death experience actually is the soul leaving the body. Now, if you've asked those people, they probably have not gone through their life review because they've established that they really aren't dead yet. The body is still needing that soul. So that's my take on a near-death experience, is the soul has left the body, which, I mean, when you've got Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, there's a lot of diseases where our soul feels so trapped in that body that it leaves all the time. But there's a difference because it's not leaving thinking, oh, my body's dead. I'm now crossing over.
Marissa, what is spirit telling you about, one, the kind of contradictory idea that there's this mistake, you know, which we hear all the time, you know, people are on this path and okay, they're dead. And that's one of the things the researchers will tell you is, from a medical standpoint, it is not a near-death experience. It is a death experience. The body is dead. And unless something, you know, happens medically, you know, amazingly, they're going to remain dead. And a lot of times these people report that they were really content and moving towards, you know, accepting their death. And many of them go through the life review and go through a lot of the rest of that. And then there's this, oh no, you got a return thing. And I always had the question of what's going on there? I mean, God made a mistake there. Oops, you know, your timeline is up. It's like out of a cartoon or something. You know, the tap on the shoulder, no, you need to go back. What's spirit telling you about that process?
Well, what they tell me is that the soul can't necessarily control the body. Okay. If the soul could control the body, it could heal the body of cancer. It could do all kinds of things. So the soul can't control the fact that the heart's being stimulated and wanting to be brought back. And it's my belief from spirit that our brain takes at least an hour to really die before it's completely dead once the heart has stopped. So there's still brain function going on. And if that soul is still connected at all to that brain function, it can still communicate. So a lot of times the soul really does want to come back and finish. That human consciousness probably doesn't. There's, I could see coming back and having a near-death experience, there being great depression because life's not easy here. And when you cross over, you're freed of a lot. I mean, it's like the chains are broken. You're freed of a lot. So to have to be pulled back into the body is, you know, not an easy task. But we have control over, we can commit suicide anytime if we really wanted to end it. So we do have control over stopping our physical body.
Okay. Let's switch gears for a minute. Let's talk about entheogens, drugs, LSD, psychedelics, that kind of stuff. A lot of people report entering into this, again, I call it this extended consciousness realm, but it seems to have a lot of overlap. What is spirit telling you about that entry into this realm?
Okay, a couple things. Spirit doesn't really recommend the being, for example, doing this work and being under the influence is not really a good idea. It's good to be more in mental control, but obviously, and you say LSD and things like that, you're also talking ayahuasca, mushrooms, all of those peyote, right. Those experiences, it does take the guard down of the ego and allows you to experience something your ego will not come in and block. Our ego is a pretty powerful thing. I mean, is spirit condoning it? Not really, but can it happen? I mean, I'm not sure I'm answering your question. Is the question, what is spirit saying about LSD? Is the spirit saying, don't do it? Spirit saying, I need this body to finish out my life. Don't be doing drugs, okay? The soul is literally like, don't be doing drugs. But what happens is, a lot of times souls are a different vibration than our body and there's a chemical clash and we become very chemically imbalanced. And what happens? We start self-medicating.
Right. And I get that. And I think you have to draw an important line and distinction there. But it's interesting if we take it outside of our culture and like you did, you know, you talk about ayahuasca or you go down to, you know, the cultures in southern Mexico where the magic mushroom was first discovered, and they seem to have a different relationship to those chemicals and those substances and use them in a more, I think, what we would understand, a more spiritually responsible kind of way. Does that change the equation? And let me add to that question, because I just interviewed a fascinating woman, Jan Van Eiselstein. She spent the last 25 years studying these shamanic people of Far Eastern Siberia who are by all accounts just incredible. I mean, they live in this world and the other world at the same time in constant spirit communication. Is there a difference in terms of how we approach entering into these different realms, and whether it's through ayahuasca or whether it's through a drum ceremony or some other, you know, being bit by ants or bees, you know, which is also this thing. Can we really put that moral judgment on it and say, no, you're not supposed to manipulate your consciousness to enter these other realms? I'm okay if that's what you're hearing, but I just want to clarify.
No, I'm hearing it's okay. There's a difference between going and doing recreational drugs because you want to escape your reality and not be responsible for your actions. Okay, there's a difference between that and going and doing a cultural ceremony with inhibitors to be able to be in an altered state so that your ego can get out of the way and you can maybe hear the voice of God or you can get information from spirit. Those are two completely different things. I condone ceremonial medicine with caution.
Yeah, I hear you. That's cool. Quick follow-up question about the Olche. And again, you know, I totally respect where you're coming from. There's no simple answers here, but I'm interviewing Jan about the Olche, again, these ancient shamanic people of Siberia. And one of the things she says, hey, this is something you'll find interesting. The Olche have told me that don't go bother your ancestral spirits. So this whole medium communication thing, they're like, don't do that. The spirits don't want to be bothered. They're moving on. They're doing all the rest of this. And I even asked her, because I do have enough experience with talking with gifted mediums like yourself. And I said, you know, what I'm hearing from a lot of people is kind of the opposite of that, is that the spirits have this love connection with us. There's this soul group, and they're eager to, when called upon and in the appropriate way, help us in our lives and further us, guiding us. How would you resolve that apparent contradiction there?
That is such a great question, because here's the thing, okay, a culture is raised to believe that they respect their ancestors and they want to allow them to rest in peace. And I get that. That could be a religious belief, a cultural belief. I understand that. But when you say, people say, don't bother spirit. Let me just put it this way. Spirit bothered me.
Right.
Spirit bothered me. I didn't ever set out to say, hey, I want to contact the dead. Spirit came to me. For what reason? I may never know the full answer to that. But they did because they could. So I've never once had a spirit say to me, don't bother me because I'm resting. Don't bother me. I want to rest in peace. They come to me. I don't even give them permission. And it's not like I'm summoning them and I'm taking them away from their restful peace. They're coming to me and I'm just allowing it. Okay. So they're the ones who bothered me.
Right.
So if anyone says, what am I supposed to, I'm a polite person. So I wouldn't say, hey, I don't want to bother your peaceful rest, please. I don't want to do that. So that's just, to me, those are cultural beliefs, which I totally respect 100%. And I'm sure one of those Siberian, ministers or would never even come to me for that because they don't believe in that. And that's okay. Belief system is a whole nother show.
Exactly. Okay, great. One more question in terms of mapping out these extended realms. Another buddy of mine through the show, Ray Hernandez, has done some fantastic work through the Edgar Mitchell Free Institute. They've published the most comprehensive survey of non-human intelligence contact, i.e. the ET contact experience. They've kind of compared it with the NDE experience, and find a lot of parallels between near-death experience and this ET contact experience. What is spirit telling you about ET contact experience in this other realm? Is it different? Is it a whole different ball game? Is it kind of in the same space? What is spirit telling you?
Well, first of all, what I've been told by spirit is that there is life on other planets. They have souls that are using their physical bodies as well. They also interact in the same soul dimension that we do. It's not really different. We can have a soul. Our soul can go have a life on another planet, and then it can also come back and have a life on this planet. There's times when I have seen spirits show up that didn't look human. They looked something different. So, that's the thing I'm being shown is that, and the interaction is do we want, like, for example, I have astral traveled to the other side. Took me a while to believe I was doing it, but I finally got the rhythm of it. And I have seen souls walking around that are totally different. I'm not sure if this is your question, but yes, I do believe that ETs have souls. And I do believe that they reside in the other dimension along with our souls. It's basically the souls are souls and they can have lives in so many different dimensions. It's by choice.
Great. I love that. That's very succinct. Let me ask a related question about science and technology, because we do seem to be at the point with some of our frontier science, we seem to be at the edge of penetrating this realm, if you will, this extended consciousness. We have head transplants, strong AI, genetic engineering. Are we going to have an iPhone app for the spirit world? And I say that somewhat facetiously. The real question is, what is the role? What is the relationship between technology and spirit?
The relationship is that spirit is magnetic and electrical enough that they can utilize technology to communicate with us. We don't really need an app, but just remember, everything that's an app is created by man. And what it, you know, men, what do we have? We have egos, right? Humans have egos. So we're going to be creating the app by that. And there's apps out there that you can, like, you know, you can see a spirit walking around or a demon. And there's the most ridiculous thing, but spirit can actually manipulate technology to communicate with us at 100%, no different EVPs. You know, I've listened to a 15-minute voicemail message from a spirit, that was after they died. I mean, I've had phone calls from spirit. I mean, they can manipulate all of that.
I totally accept that from what I've encountered and researched. And I guess a related question to that is, when it comes to ET and it comes to civilizations and species that are more technologically advanced than ours, are we seeing in some cases that advanced technology intersecting with the spirit world in terms of, you know, people are having screen memories, people are having, you know, shape-shifting, time travel, all that stuff. I mean, are there entities, and I love how you said ego-based, because I think that's kind of an important element of this. Are there ego-based soul manifestations that have this ability, technological ability, to manipulate things in a really, really advanced way?
I mean, is the question, are ETs on other planets more advanced than us? Absolutely. I think that sometimes we're still in the Stone Age. They are more advanced. There are other species that are more advanced than us. But then they also can cross over to our environment to observe. I think that we've gotten a lot of our technology from ET presence, ET contact, or even channeling that information.
Marissa, where is God in all of this? Is there, and I don't mean that in a real churchy kind of way, I just mean it in this kind of hierarchy of consciousness that, from my investigation, seems to pop up. I mean, people do seem to reach the other side and say, well, I'm at this level on the other side, but I know there's this next level up, and I know there's this next level up. And it seems to be pointing towards something that sounds a lot like God. I mean, where do you come down on that whole thing?
It's really interesting. When you're talking about levels and people reaching levels, the first thing I heard was Scientology. And it was almost like it's like a Scientology based, oh, I've got to get to the next level. But I don't believe there are levels that our soul is trying to elevate to a level, you know, A, B, C, or D. God, I may not ever have the answer like the rest of the human race. I don't think science is ever going to figure out God. I just know God, I don't believe, is one person. God does not choose who has cancer, who dies, who this or that. None of that. God is not calling the shots. I do believe that there is an energy-based creator, but can I tell you who or what that is? No.
What about the accounts from the NDEers, the near-death experience people? That's what I was really kind of referring to, where they say, you know, one, it's about love, right? That's the first thing that comes through. It's about love. It's about this connection. Even the life review is about, oh my gosh, now I see things from the perspective of these other people that I was encountering, and my love and compassion and empathy is causing me both pleasure and pain, you know, as I see what I've done. But they do point towards there being this higher being of intelligence, this higher order of spirit. And I guess I just want clarification on that. I'm not trying to jam you in any one direction, but...
No, I understand. I understand completely what you're asking. And my take on it from spirit is that it's not necessarily like there's a hierarchy exactly, or there's not like a panel or a government on the other side that God controls or anything like that. It's all about experience. There's no religion on the other side. There is a belief and it's love. There is a feeling and it's love. Yes. Do we have personalities as a soul? Yes, we do. Do we, you know, can we criticize? Yes, we can criticize. It's not like all fairy tales and unicorns on the other side. And the life review is that is not God judging you. That is not anybody judging you. The life review is your opportunity to learn. You came down here and just experienced a life that had ups and downs and could be difficult, could be wonderful, whatever it is. And now this is your chance to actually get, be out of a human state of mind and be able to experience it as a soul. And it's like, it's that learning moment. It's, it is self-judgment, but not, it's usually you're self-judging yourself in a loving way. I mean, that's the only way I can describe it. I don't, there is no judgment. There's no hell. There's no creator going, man, you really blew it. Right. You know, there's not. You might get over there and go out, oh, okay, I could have done that better. Maybe I shouldn't have killed him.
Right.
You know? So people always ask me, like, where's Hitler? I'm sorry, Hitler's on a soul on the other side like everyone else. There's right. no hell that he's burning in.
Right.
And people just don't understand that. They're like, well, how can you even say that?
Great. Well, this is incredible. You know, like I say, I'm throwing the biggest big picture questions at you, and you're just knocking them down one after another. I have one more, and then I want to head towards wrapping it up because I really appreciate you spending this time with me. And the final question, it's kind of a little bit off to the side here, but what are we to make of the thought form thing, the Buddhist tulpa thing, that everything is a thought form? We are creating our reality by our thoughts continuously. And, you know, the when you get into the lucid dreaming thing, I have a direct experience with that in terms of lucid dreams. You suddenly realize, wow, you know, these dreams, I am creating these, and then I'm living it as I create it. And the Buddhists have said this all along, and other wisdom traditions have said this. What do you make of this thought form that we are creating our reality kind of thing? What is spirit telling you?
What you are creating, your life that you're creating, is the reaction of your thought. So I don't believe, like, if I think I'm rich, all of a sudden I'm rich. Okay. If I think I'm sick, all of a sudden I'm sick. I don't believe we're creating it that way. I don't feel like you can sit back and have this daydream of what you want your life to be like, and then the second you open your eyes, it magically appears. So there's a fine line. I mean, it's very broad what they're saying, but I understand that what it really is, we are what we think we are. And I believe in that 100%. You know, if you think you're fat, then that's what you're going to perceive yourself as fat. If you think you're, and I get this a lot from a lot of clients, if you think that you are, your life is doomed and you are a victim and you're never going to have love or compassion or a relationship, if you believe that, that is going to happen. You will create that because you believe it. Okay. It's no different than when someone says there's a curse been put on you. There's no curses, but if you believe there's a curse, you will live your life as if there is, you will react to everything as if there is, and therefore you will create it. You can create it in your mind. So I understand what they're saying, but I think that it's more broad.
I wonder how that relates to what we started out talking about in the process of mediumship. And in particular, like your case of, you know, it's kind of trauma related, your opening up to this. And boy, when you study mediumship, that comes up over and over again, is this trauma being this opening. And then in its kind of worst case, there's people in particular our government and some, you know, MK Ultra and some other agencies that have said, oh, great, let's try and get into that other realm by breaking people open, by traumatizing people, abusing people intentionally, and seeing if we can break into that other world.
I don't think it's going to work that way.
But trauma does seem to be related here in terms of breaking people open in some weird way.
It can be. I mean, I'm not going to say that the death of my mother and my niece was traumatic. It was sad, but I don't feel it was traumatic. And there was a lot of trauma in my life. I'd been in a shootout when I was a little kid. There was lots of little things. Grew up with an alcoholic father. And, you know, here's the thing. Marianne Williamson said it in an interview, and it really, really clicked for me when she said some of the best intuitive psychic training is being raised in a dysfunctional family. So I don't necessarily think it's about trauma. Trauma, when somebody has trauma, what do? Number one, they slow down, right? If you have a traumatic experience, whether it be physical, mental, or emotional, you're going to slow down and start paying attention to your thoughts. You're going to start asking why. Why me? Why did this happen to me? So the key to me to that is slowing down. So for example, I grew up with an alcoholic father. I walked on eggshells my entire life. Can you imagine the training of my having intuition and having to read my environment 24/7? So what did that do? That caused me to slow down and be very aware of my environment, aware of what I said, aware of my father's mood, my mother's mood, all of that. So trauma slows people down and makes them start questioning reality, the why, their beliefs. It starts changing how they think and feel, even if it's anger. That to me is I don't think government really needs to create trauma to get people to start, you know, opening up. But that's what I believe is happening is the trauma. It's like the near-death experience. All of a sudden people, you know, Daniel Brinkley, all of a sudden you come out of a near-death experience and now you feel like you're seeing spirit. Well, yes, you may have brought some of that with you, but also that made him, he had a second chance. You know, you get a second chance in life, you're going to start asking why. Why did I get a second chance in life, and is it worth it? Am I worthy? Am I worthy? And what am I supposed to do with that?
Right.
To me, it's about slowing down and slowing your conscious level down to being more aware of every single thing around you. Once people slow down, you'd be amazed at what you can hear, see, feel, and think.
Marissa, what kind of people do you feel like you're best suited to help? You offer medium and psychic readings for people. What kind of folks are you feel like you're best able to help?
Well, what I do, I believe, is about healing. Okay. It's about healing. So I have to get a lot of validation in my readings for them to even start processing the healing, or they're not even going to believe what I'm saying. So that to me, getting validation is very important. People seek me out because they want to connect with someone who died to know they're okay. And you know, to see if they, you know, they can still connect with them, or are they mad at me, or where's the will, or whatever. But also people connect with me because I'll put it this way. Why do people go to psychics? Because they want confirmation of what they already know. So when somebody already has a feeling about something, but they're not sure how to choose or make or get an answer, they'll go to somebody who's a psychic, because if they sit there in silence and all of a sudden this total stranger out of their mouth says exactly what they were thinking or exactly about the decision they have to make, all of a sudden it becomes more real to them. It's that second validation of I'm going in the right direction or I'm going in the wrong direction. So I think for me, if it's about healing, if people want healing with connecting with somebody that has passed, that they're, you know, grieving. A lot of therapists send their grief clients to me, to be able to have that connection with the deceased, to have hope that we do go on, or to get some guidance from their guides to help them make better decisions so they can live their best life. That's another thing. I work with people's guides because we have guides, and that can give them insight to directions they need to change or keep going, or eliminate people in their life, or create, you know, careers, create relationships. Those are the kinds of, that's basically what I do, is I communicate with spirit for people.
Marissa, do you still do any of that psychic detective work if people have, some kind of really horrible thing that's going on and they want answers to that? Do you help people with that, or is that something you don't do so much anymore?
No, I do. I have people that come to me all the time with missing persons, murder cases, I probably get at least 5 to 6 a month, and I'm very happy to work with them. I don't charge if I'm working with a missing person or a murder case. As far as working with police, I love to let people know the police don't want to work with psychics, really, because what we say is not admissible in court. So if anyone, I'm not a psychic detective that is, you know, hired by law enforcement. Usually the family will bring the case to me, And then I give them information and they go to the detectives with the information I've given them. And then the detectives, they show up at my house because they either think I'm a part of it. How did I know the information? And then when I help them find a body, then they usually will completely write up in the report that I did not say anything helpful at all.
Right, right. And then everyone's happy.
Oh, yeah. No, I have TV producers all the time saying, we want to do a show with you working with police. I said, you find the police department that wants to work with me and I will be happy to do it. But I understand. I used to do some law enforcement. I went through the police academy and I understand why they can't. My son's a cop. I understand.
Wow. Yeah, it's not just the cops, it's the prosecutors too. So it's a complex process that people need to understand. And as your story at the very beginning confirmed, I love the story where you say, you know, the cop is retired and comes back and comes to you and says, I still want to solve this case and I know you're legit. Help me do it. That's a pretty powerful story.
Yeah, I know. I honestly just kind of had to let that case go because it drove me crazy for multiple years. And it was just, it's not easy working with spirit. Let me just say that. It's not that easy.
So again, our guest today has been Marissa Ryan. If you want to check out more, I'll have a link in the show notes to her website, which is really simple. It's marissaryan.com, spelled with one S. And people are welcome to go there. And how long of a backlog do you have right now for folks who want a session? Are you able to get them in a couple months or how does it work?
About 4 months.
Okay. And, you know, folks, you'll find that the best mediums are going to have a similar kind of backlog. So I would encourage people not to be discouraged by that, but just to jump in line and, you know, kind of see what happens. But by all accounts, Marissa, you're fantastic. And I just thank you so much for handling these kind of questions that I'm sure maybe I've seemed a little bit off the wall at times, but were really, really great. So I appreciate it.
Thank you, Alex, for having me on. It's been great and wonderful questions.
Thanks again to Marissa Ryan for joining me today on Skeptico. The one question I'd have to tee up from this interview is, to what extent should we rely on / trust what mediums tell us? And that's a broad question because I want to have a broad answer, a broad discussion about all the possibilities. You know, I gave you an example of some personal stuff that she gave me that just really resonated with me, and I trust that. But does that mean I trust her on all the other big picture stuff? Well, not necessarily in my case, because I have a bunch of other contradictory evidence from other people that makes me wonder not that Marissa's wrong, but that there may be another way of understanding how multiple people can be right, that multiple points of view can be right about this. So that's really kind of an interesting question to toss back and forth, because I think it could go a lot of different ways. And I think it's the kind of thing that we should follow up on in Skeptico and do future interviews and shows about. But as I was saying at the beginning, you know, if we come together as a community, I think we can better figure out what's already going on in that area, what's being said, and then what we might be able to add to that discussion. So those are some of my thoughts on where I'd like to take it. So as I said at the beginning, connect with me and let's figure that out. The place to do it is, of course, through the Skeptico website, skeptiko.com, where you'll find links to all the good stuff, including all the past shows that you can download for free and enjoy, hopefully, and listen to. So that's going to do it for this episode. I have a bunch of stuff coming up. Please stay with me for all of that. But until next time, take care and bye for now.